Welcome to Herd Mentality, a podcast from StoneX where we discuss global dairy markets and what's driving them. The compliance group says it is important to remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. We're recording June 27th in the morning U.S. time, and it's been a very volatile week in the U.S. market. We've gotten two bullish USDA reports, with the May milk production report coming out late last Friday. The Class 3 milk futures rallied on Monday in response to that report. Cheese sold off Tuesday. Class 3 collapsed with at least one of the contracts trading limit down. And then we got a bullish cold storage report Tuesday afternoon. The market rallied on Wednesday. It traded both up and down a little bit on Thursday, but finished in the green. So it's been a very volatile week. The data has been bullish. And with me is Dave Krzyzewski, team lead in the Chicago office, who's generally more bullish than I am. So I thought he would be a good guest to have on this week. Dave, U.S. milk production in May, our forecast was minus 0.5%. Instead, production came in at minus 0.9%, so significantly worse than forecast. What did you make of the May milk production report?
Well, you know, 17 of the top 24 milk producing states were lower. I just look at the, you know, real simple things here. You know, it's like we have a problem in terms of milk production, I think. And you know, in periods of lower demand, probably doesn't matter as much. But I think that you know, some of this is probably due to my thesis that you know it's been a harder couple of years for dairy producers, generally speaking. Certainly on the Class 3 side, maybe more than the Class 4 side. But then the avian flu, obviously, I think is apparent in this report. But I thought it was interesting that California and Pennsylvania both had significant declines in May, given that we really haven't heard, you know, any, you know, confirmations of avian flu in those states. And certainly the milk production in those states looked like maybe they behaved as though, you know, this illness is there. What did you think of that, Nate?
I was just trying to do the math quick on your production being down on, what did you say, 17 states?
17, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to tally up all the numbers, but it looks like the size of the dairy herd is down in 12 of the states compared to a year ago, and the herd is flat year over year in another three of the states. So a lot of the decline, when you look at it that way, is coming from a smaller dairy herd, and that seems to be flattening out. Technically, we're up, I think, 27,000 cows from January, but January was a weird drop in cow numbers. We're basically flat from December of last month. So if we stay flat, the herd is only going to be down something like 0.2% from a year ago in July, instead of being down 0.7% in the month of May. So I guess the point there is just that the herd is still down significantly from year ago levels, but it's flattened out. If we stay flat, it's going to be adding about half a point to the milk production numbers by July and August. So I think there's that metric that 17 of the states are down should start to shift in the next couple of months. But what makes the milk production report bullish to me is the fact that we were only down, what was it, 0.6% in April, and then we're down 0.9% in May. So the growth got worse in May. But if you remove California from the numbers and you just look at milk production in the other states, we were down 0.5% in April and we were down 0.5% in May. So the weakness, the deterioration in the growth rate between April and May was really driven by California. And I've asked around this week
why production in California was so weak in May. And the only explanation that people seem to have is bird flu. But like you said, we haven't seen any confirmed cases in California. We've heard rumors, but those rumors started during June. But with California down 1.5% year over year in May, I think the logical conclusion for now is that bird flu was probably driving a good chunk of that.
Yeah. And if that's the case, it's like the best kept secret in dairy. Probably
yeah, I know.
Kept secret ever, you know, it because someone's going to talk about something and mention something to somebody. So even if they're not reporting it, you know, you get a sense of that. But the folks I've talked to out in California seem to think that it's not there. At the moment, certainly I would have thought that they would have gotten it earlier. There's a lot of cattle that's moved from Texas to California. Some of those dairy producers raise their animals in Texas. So, so good point. Okay, fair, Nate. The only thing is, I would say that if you don't want to talk about milk per cow, or if you want to talk about cow numbers rather, then the question becomes, do we have enough replacement heifers? Because that, I think, is the other underlying issue. And I think I leaned a little bit heavy on that, although I don't think I even mentioned it in the last episode we did together. I think I leaned a little heavy on that supply side of the market creating what has been a, you know, bullish market for class three and cheese here in the last couple months. I think maybe it's actually more demand driven, but the supply side is there and it's going to be with us for a long time, I think.
The supply side is going to be there in terms of supply side problems.
Supply side problems underpinning, you know, both class three and cheese markets, I think, going forward. So maybe I leaned a little heavy on the supply side, a couple weeks ago, as opposed to maybe putting more of the focus on the demand side. But the reality is, if milk per cow can bounce back during the summer, good luck with that. But if it can bounce back, you still have this, you know, are there enough fresh heifers out there? And what does that look like going forward? And my contention is that, yeah, it's going to be tight. It's going to be tough, tight. And the herd, the age of the herd is going to continue to get older.
Yeah. And I would say it's tough because we're looking at this May milk production data. It looks bullish. It looks supportive. It was lower than forecast. But April was better than forecast. And maybe next month we get a quarterly milk production report. The methodology is a little bit more rigorous. Maybe things don't look so bullish. But right now, when I look at that production per cow, you look at production per cow in states where we know there's a lot of bird flu, and it's pretty weak. It's bouncing back in some of the states where they had a lot of bird flu infections early on, Texas, New Mexico, Idaho. But the virus is still spreading. I think at most 8% of the herd has maybe been exposed to this virus so far. So it's probably going to continue spreading, and it still has to make its way through 92% of the herd. I don't think we're going to see some type of big sharp drop at a national level in terms of milk production. But as the virus continues to spread, it's just going to be this continuous drag on growth and production per cow moving forward. So I'm with you that the weak milk production story is probably going to be with us for a while, but the numbers are going to get, I think, a little bit better as those cow numbers start to lap over the big declines last year. But before we run out of time, let's talk about the cold storage report for May. Cheese stocks in May were 32 million pounds lower than forecast, down 3.7% year over year. Butter stocks were 16 million pounds lower than forecast, up 3.4% year over year. But that's a significant shift from the more than 9% growth that we saw in butter inventories for April. What do you take away from the cold storage report?
Well, it, on the cheese side, for sure, it supports what I had heard anecdotally from customers who were like, boy, our sales for whatever were, you know, on cheese snacks or whatever the product might have been, really took off in April and then accelerated and even got better in May. I don't know why that is. I mean, the days get longer. People might feel better about themselves. That's a pretty generic way to look at it, maybe. But, I think that this kind of confirms, that demand has been a key driving force here, for at least from the cheese perspective. Probably demand got better on butter as well, although I don't hear as much about that anecdotally. It still seems to be rather, quiet from a standpoint of, bulk butter demand. The numbers would bear out that demand probably improved as well versus like Q1.
Yeah, I don't know, Dave. The days get longer, but then I have to put on a swimming suit and I do not feel better about myself. I don't know about that theory, but...
Good point. I mean, let's just say that demand for cheese for the past year has been, really soft relative to historicals. And, that can't last forever, I guess.
Yeah. No, agreed. To get inventories coming in that low, the domestic demand or export demand must have come in much higher than what I was expecting. Right now, it looks like May domestic disappearance on cheese is up 1.3% on top of 1.8% last year, which is decent growth. It's not excessively strong growth. Long-term average is something like 1.8% or 2% growth. But it's a lot better than the minus 3.5% that we saw back in January and February. And like you said, it's hard to point to something that has actually shifted in terms of consumer demand in the last couple of months or point to exactly what's driving that shift. But obviously the cheese demand got a lot better March, April, May than what we saw in January and February. So, Dave, right now we got futures. Let's see, the August, September, October Class 3 milk futures over $20 a hundredweight. What do you think about that?
Well, it's been a volatile week. We finished before that cold storage report came out. We were limit down. I think I can count on one hand how many times it's been a good idea to buy limit down. In my career over 22 years. So it's rarely a good idea. And it would have been a beautiful idea for anybody who wanted to buy, let's say, August Class 3 or August cheese, I think would have been a beautiful idea ahead of that cold storage report. Now, we'll see. I mean, markets can correct and, bull markets don't go straight up. I do believe we're in a bull market. We're still in a bull market. We're not, that hasn't changed. I mean, we're just sitting here talking. I mean, if we look at the milk production side, it's either milk per cow with the avian flu or it's heifer replacements with the cow numbers. Those are going to be key concerns going forward. If we look at demand obviously has gotten better. That may not last forever, but it's what we have to deal with today. If I look at the futures market, what I think I like to watch open interest in the market. And right now, if I look at Class 3 and cheese, the markets have gotten smaller from this time last year. This time last year, Class 3 open interest was over 30,000 contracts. Futures, it's down 24% right now. Cheese open interest is down 37%. That's on cheese futures alone. So that doesn't include options. So then I said, these market, the futures markets have actually gotten smaller. That means less coverage, okay, on both sides, really. But less people have price protection in both of these markets right now. Then I said, well, maybe options have become more popular. Class 3 options are down 5%. Cheese options are down 25 or 26%. So the options markets have gotten smaller too. Maybe some of this has migrated over to the OTC side. I don't have that data right off the top here, but my guess is that people got caught. And when I say people, I mean buyers generally have gotten caught. Caught short of having, coverage on price coverage into the future. I think when you come into the year and it's a 150 and everybody's bearish and can't see a story that things can change, and I get it, that happens. But when you can't see it, then you look out at the second half of the year and we're at $1.80 and people go, I can't reach up and pay $1.80 and explain that to my boss if we're at $1.50 right here in the Q1. So they don't do it. And now they're fighting to get $1.96 or $2 in the second half of the year. So that fact that open interest, the markets have gotten smaller, doesn't mean people need less. It doesn't mean that they don't need that coverage. They need the coverage. And so I think you get a situation here as we approach the July 4th holiday that, you know, buyers can get kind of quiet. We've seen some offers on the spot market come in. Maybe people have canceled orders out there in the country or they just haven't placed them yet. And so there's a few available fresh loads. But at some point, they're going to have to come back in and buy. And so I don't think we've seen the top for the spot cheese market, nor the futures market. I don't know what month it'll be, maybe August or September. Who knows? But I think we've got more upside.
All right. And that's a good place to leave it. Thanks for your time today, Dave.
You got it, Nate. Always appreciated.
The StoneX Dairy Team spans the U.S., EU, Asia, and Oceania, providing market intelligence, analysis, and forecasts through our interactive data platform called StoneX Plus, as well as full-service brokerage on the major dairy exchanges, the CME, EEX, and SGX. If you're interested in finding out more about our market intelligence or brokerage services, you can find more information on StoneX.com.
This communication is issued in the European Economic Area by StoneX Financial Europe SA, SFE by the SFE presenters noted. This communication is issued in the United States by FCM Division of StoneX Financial Inc., SFI, by the SFI presenters noted. And the material should be construed as the solicitation of trading strategies and/or services provided by SFI. StoneX is the trade name used by StoneX Group Inc. and all its associated entities and subsidiaries. StoneX Group Inc. companies provide financial services worldwide through its subsidiaries, including physical commodities, securities, exchange-traded and over-the-counter, under derivatives, risk management, global payments, and foreign exchange products in accordance with applicable law in the jurisdictions where services are provided. References to certain over-the-counter ROTCA products or swaps are made on behalf of StoneX Markets, LLC SXM, a member of the National Futures Association NFA and provisionally registered with the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission CFTC as a swap dealer. SXM products are designed only for individuals or firms who qualify under CFTC rules as an eligible contract participant ECPAT and who have been accepted as customers of SXM. Wealth management is offered through SA Stone Wealth Management Inc., member FINRA/SIPC, and SA Stone Investment Advisors Inc. and SEC Registered Investment Advisor, both wholly owned subsidiaries of StoneX Group Inc. StoneX Financial Limited SFL is registered in England and Wales, Company No. 5,616,586. SFL is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority Registration Number FRN 446,717 to provide to professional and eligible customers including arrangement, execution and, where required, clearing derivative transactions in exchange traded futures and options. SFL is also authorized to engage in the arrangement and execution of transactions in certain OTC products, certain securities trading, precious metals trading, and payment services to eligible customers. SFL is authorized regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority under the Payment Services Regulations 2017 for the provision of payment services. SFL is a Category 1 ring dealing member of the London Metal Exchange. In addition, SFL also engages in other physically delivered commodities business and other general business activities which are unregulated and not required to be authorized by the Financial Conduct Authority. StoneX Financial Europe SA. SFE is a securities trading firm registered in the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg under Company No. RC Lux B 10,821. SFE is authorized by the Luxembourg Ministry of Finance and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier Registration No. P00000012 to carry out, inter alia, the activities of investment advisor, portfolio manager, professional acting on own account, broker in financial instruments, and commission agent. StoneX Financial T. Limited Co. Reg. No. 201,130,598 RSFP holds a capital market services license and is regulated by Monetary Authority of Singapore MASIF for dealing in exchange-traded derivatives contracts, OTC derivatives contracts and spot foreign exchange contracts for the purposes of leveraged foreign exchange trading. StoneX Financial HK Limited C No. BCQ 152-SHK is regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission for dealing in futures contracts. StoneX Group Inc. acts as agent for SFL in New York with respect to its payment services business. StoneX Financial T. Limited acts as agent for SFL in Singapore with respect to its payment services business. Trading swaps and over-the-counter derivatives, exchange-traded derivatives and options and securities involve substantial risk and is not suitable for all investors. These materials represent the opinions and viewpoints of the author and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and trading strategies employed by the FCM division of SFI or SXM. These materials represent the opinions and viewpoints of the author and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and trading strategies employed by the FCM division of SFI or SXM. The information herein is not a recommendation to trade nor investment research or an offer to buy or sell any derivative or security. It does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs and does not create a binding obligation on any of the StoneX Group Inc. of companies to enter into any transaction with you. you. You are advised to perform an independent investigation of any transaction to determine whether any transaction is suitable for you. SFP may distribute analysis/report produced by its respective foreign affiliates within the StoneX group of companies pursuant to an arrangement under Regulation 32C of the Financial Advisors Regulations. The analysis/report is only permitted to be distributed in Singapore to a person who is an accredited investor, expert investor, or an institutional investor as defined under Section 4A of the Securities Futures Act Singapore. Recipients should contact SFP at 656309-1000 for any matters arising from, or in connection with, the analysis or report distributed. No part of this material may be copied, photocopied, or duplicated in any form by any means or redistributed without the prior written consent of StoneX Group Inc. Copyright 2024 StoneX Group Inc. All rights reserved.